building character through Bible characters. Why would we study the characters of the Bible? Understanding that God could have selected so many things to put in His Bible. And obviously, since the beginning of time, He had had a multiple choice of so many. But He chose the ones that He did. I suggest to you that He chose these because they manifest characteristics that He wants us to emulate and to put in our character. Last Sunday, I began a series of lessons, which I will continue on and off for a while, of going to various Bible characters with the goal of helping us build our own character. What is character? One way to understand it is to understand that we are at least three persons. The first person we are is who we think we are. That is our ego. Our, as the Greeks would say, our ego. I am. I am this. What we think of ourselves is our ego. Now, often we use the word ego in a negative sense. We're not talking necessarily about an egotistical person. Everyone has an ego or should have an ego if you're a normal person. You cannot live a full and godly life without a proper sense of who you are and the importance that God has placed upon each of us. But then there's a second person, and that's who others think you are, and that's your reputation. And often they're not the same. Who I think I am is not who you think I am. But then there's a third person to bring into the discussion. That's who God knows you are, and that's your character. Now, the goal of life is for these three to be one. The person that God knows I am is the person, hopefully, that you see and is the person that I believe I am. That's the goal of a lifetime. To bring these three visions, these three views of our character into one. And so we ask, how do you build your character? Over time, how does God instruct us to build our character? Well, I use this little paradigm to help us. Sow a thought, reap an action. We act on the basis of what we think and how we think. And then sow an action, reap a habit. Repeatedly sow that action. To illustrate, to be kind, we must think kind thoughts, which lead to kind or loving actions, which repeated over time, again and again and again, produces a kind person. Same as the truthful person. We have to decide to be truthful and then to tell the truth and tell the truth again and again and again, and ultimately it is ingrained in our character and is a part of us. We reap a habit, and then sow a habit, reap a character. Do you see the connection? The person that I am is the sum total of my habits. If I habitually am lazy, that's my character. If I'm habitually late, then that's a part of my character. If I'm habitually shade the truth, that's a part or becomes a part of my character. And then finally, sow a character, reap a destiny. The only thing that gets out of this world alive is me. In you, the real you, the person that God knows that you are. That's the person we leave with when we put off this mortal body, this mortal coil, and it goes back to the dust. We ascend to be with the Lord. Note this statement from the Proverbs about what we think becomes who we are. Do not eat the bread of a selfish man or desire his delicacies. Well, why? Why shouldn't I associate with people who are selfish and I should not desire their high lifestyle? Because, for as he thinks within himself, so he is. He has become the selfish person that he is because that's the way he thinks. And to be in his association continually, it will rub off on you. He says to you, eat and drink, but his heart is not with you. He has other ulterior motives. He has his mind not on you, but on himself. So he warns us, as he thinks within himself, let's change it to ourselves. As we think within ourselves, so we are. So therefore, we must practice the activity of thinking good thoughts, of focusing on good things continually, every day. Character and commitment. Our elders have asked us in the home studies that we are now engaged in, one per month, to focus on commitment. And I suggest to you, without commitment, our character will never change for the good. To mold our character into the character of God requires perseverance and a lifetime of commitment. Commitment is what transforms a promise into a reality. Commitment is the stuff character is made of, the power to change the face of things. It is the daily triumph of integrity over skepticism. So important. Why is it that often we'll make resolutions and a few months later we've dropped them, we don't think of them again? We come into a worship assembly and we have what I call a spiritual spasm. We feel, oh, I need to do that. Or wouldn't it be nice to be more spiritual? Or I need to love people more, or this or that. And then we leave and nothing is done. Why? No commitment. Character is absolutely necessary to build our character. I found this quote. I like it. Commitment means staying loyal to what you said you were going to do long after the mood you said it in has left you. I want you to think about that. I've performed several wedding ceremonies. As far as I can see from the look of their face and through premarital counseling, they loved one another. I'm sad to tell you that a lot of those didn't have the commitment to build it. Because why? The mood had changed. We were in a situation where the mood moved us to make a commitment, to make a promise. But when that changed, without commitment, we did not follow through. But today, I want to add another to character and commitment. I want to add the word mother. I don't think there can be an outstanding or prominent or great mother without commitment and without character. If you want a good definition of commitment, go find a good mother and you'll see it in action. She is committed. And so today we choose a character from the Bible to illustrate how mothers, good mothers, great mothers, teach us about character and about commitment. And I have chosen not a prominent woman. There are many choices that one could make. But especially to honor all of us, all the mothers who quietly serve and live out their lives giving and giving and giving to so many. And I also do it to honor my mother and other great mothers that I have known. I have chosen to talk to you about the great mother of Shunem from 2 Kings 4, 8 through 37. She is called prominent or great, even though her name is not given. And so I want to note four things about her that made her great. First, she was spiritually perceptive. She loved truth. She was also hospitable. She loved strangers. Thirdly, she was contented. She loved her life. And finally, she was committed. She loved her child. Pardon the grammar. Loves her child. So let's begin. Now note I put little 1, 2, and 3 to kind of key you in. I'm going to go back and draw one of these first three points from this portion of Scripture. Now there came a day when Elisha passed over to Shunem, where there was a prominent, there's the word prominent or great, depending on your translation, a prominent woman, and she persuaded him to eat food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he turned in there to eat food. She said to her husband, "Behold now, I perceive that this is a holy man of God passing by us continually. Please let us make a little walled upper chamber, and let us set a bed for him there, and a table, and a chair, and a lampstand. And it shall be, when he comes to us, that he could turn in there." See how she's motivated? Committed? Further. "One day he came there and turned into the upper chamber and rested. Then he said to Gehazi, his servant, 'Call this Shunammite.' And when he had called her, she stood before him. He said to him, 'Say now to her, to Gehazi, say now to her, behold, you have been careful for us all of this care. What can I do for you? Would you be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the army?' And she answered, 'I live among my own people.'" Now, with this short reading, I want to bring out the first three marks of the greatness of this mother. First, she was spiritually perceptive. She recognized Elisha as a holy man of God. We're not told how she precisely saw that or knew that. Probably in normal ways of speech and demeanor, of observing him. Her husband is absolutely silent on the subject. His greatest gift is that he offered no objection. He just kept his mouth shut. Often, fellas, this is the way we show our greatness. We just remain silent. She was not so busy with material things that she had no time for spiritual things and interest. This is a difficult thing for mothers. You're often so very, very busy. Where is the time for reading and study and prayer and contemplation? Well, let's observe how Jesus dealt with this situation. It comes from an incident when he is traveling with his man, and he comes to the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Let's read about it. "As they were traveling along, he entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home." This is Bethany. "She had a sister called Mary, who was seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word." Important. "But Martha was distracted with all of her preparations, and she came up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me.'" Every time I preach on this, I know I'm getting ready for another sermon from one of the sisters. about a bad mouth in Martha in pointing out Mary. But I want to remind you, I'm just going to read you what Jesus said. This is his view. And Jesus, do you think Jesus was one of these kind of fellas that just doesn't get it about how hard it is to serve people? After all, he showed up, you know, with all of his folks, unannounced as far as we know. And preparations had to be made. Does he not care for Martha? I think it would be difficult to paint Jesus in that light. He loved Martha. And later he demonstrated it in many such ways. But look how he responded. But the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things. Anybody here guilty? I am. And I'm not a woman trying to prepare all the food for the honey for these last minute guests. Jesus was aware of the work that had to be done. He wasn't putting down Martha. He was redirecting her because she had become worried and distracted and was missing something even more important than the preparation of the food. Martha, Martha, you're worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. What was that? Focusing on Jesus. Getting the teaching. Mary, at this time at least, was more spiritually interested than Martha. And so here we have it. So easy to do. I am one that when I'm hosting or in charge of something, I'm just detail-oriented. And it's easy for me to get lost in making sure every detail is just the way it ought to be in this and that and the other. And if I'm not careful, I may miss out on what really is important. Surely there's a way, as Jesus implied, to get the most important thing first and then take care of the other as we can. And so, there's a danger to young motherhood. There's hardly very little time for Bible reading and study. Men, husbands, fathers, other women, we can help, can't we? To give them some time and some time to focus of something other than caring for the physical needs of their young family. And often we get the idea that when we host, let's say, we're going to have a woman's class, a Bible study. Well, what is that? What are women's issues? Right here. Right here. The book of Hebrews, the book of Romans, the book of Revelation, the Gospels, all of it. There's no distinction in gender as far as what we need. We need the Word of God. And so, when we have those classes, and I'm glad we do, I used to teach the women's class. Ladies, if you're willing, I'm willing. If you prefer to do it the way you do it, then that's fine too. But I love studying with all the ladies and enjoyed it very much. But then the second mark of her greatness was hospitable. She was a stranger lover. That's what the word hospitable means. It's a lover of stranger. It's a compound Greek word of two words, love and stranger. She loved strangers. The world says, love yourself first. Love your family, love your friends, those who love you. What does Christ say? Love God, love your family, love strangers and neighbors, love your enemies. And through that process, you will learn to love yourself, putting yourself last. It's an amazing transformation that once we get out of ourselves, we find ourselves. My mother, who I'm considered to be a great mother, she was to me. My mother was not the kind of woman that held her tongue, especially in regard to me. And she pointed out my flaws as she saw them. I was preaching, you know, I'm doing a great job preaching. I'm tending this, that, and the other, and this, and that, and the other, and everything. And I was talking with her. And she observed, she said, "John, you're not selfish. You'd share anything you have with anybody. But you sure are self-centered." You know what she meant? I was looking at everything and how it affected me. And that's easy to do for single people. Especially if you got a roommate named Dewey who does not seem to object to doing it the way I want to do it. Except feeding time. For those of you who don't know, he's my cat. It's easy to be self-centered. Caught up in yourself. Getting out of yourself. Thinking about others is the way to find yourself. In Christ, love is distinguished by action. Acting in the best interest of others. The word hospitable is used in at least three contexts. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. An angel, a messenger, a minister of God. Secondly, contributing to the needs of the saints. Practicing hospitality. And finally, from 1 Peter, it's the wrong reference there. It's 4:9 instead of 28:20. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. Remember, little things count with God. Little things count with God. There are problems to be overcome if we're to be truly hospitable. Cynicism? Well, they won't do any good. After all, they may be a thief. They'll steal the silver or something here. Or selfishness, materialism. We live in a world that continually, with all of its great advancements of television, I lived long enough to watch television come in. Before that, it was just radio. And after television, of course, we got the computer. And after computer, we got all these smartphones. And it's possible now for us to be in a big room and all of us on our own cell phone. And I'm in my little world, you're in your little world, and we're really not together. Are you enjoying the commercials now that are on television where the mother has got the control of the internet service in the home and all the families around the table and they're all on their phones and she turns it off? Dinner time. There's a message there. Just because we're in the same room does not mean we're having fellowship, that we're together. And there's shyness and insecurity. Remember, it doesn't require fancy things. It requires a loving heart. I'm fortunate in my work to be able to travel, and I've stayed in all kinds of homes. I've stayed in homes that were a lot nicer and more expensive than the one I've stayed in, than I live in. And I've stayed with very humble people in very humble abodes. And my observation is that often the humblest abode houses the most giving of people. It isn't always true, but I've been there. Even to the point that I was somewhat embarrassed that they were giving me their best when I had more than they did. Great reward. Being together, eating together, daily house to house, the disciples did in the first century. Encouragement and It's a lot of joy to be given and received. Children, they often can be a hindrance to having a bunch of people over. They need to be around adults. They need to be around loving, caring adults. Show them the hospitality and then contented. I live among my own people. Remember what Elisha and Gehazi offered this woman? Said, can we speak to the king for you? Just think what that would amount. We'll invite you to come to court. We'll be an introduction. No telling what your career is going to be like now that we come and to introduce you to the king. What was her response? I live among my own people. I'm contented right here. I'm not wanting to leave or to move to another situation. Contented. Loves her life. Gather the tone that comes from Titus 2, 3 through 5. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. I'll tell you, I believe contentment just rings through that whole passage. Ladies, God, through the Apostle Paul, was not laying out a remedy for your enslavement. But in our culture, to read a passage like that to a mixed audience where there are lots of women, often what is heard, we don't want to go back to that. We don't want to go back to that age of patriarchy and enslavement. That's not what he's talking about. I remind you, God made man. God made woman. He knows how they best live to their own gender and to one another. He knows the origin of us all. And then, look at this from Philippians. But I'm going to skip this just because of sake of time. You know it, the latter part of it, in verse 10, or look at verse 13. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Paul wrote that while in prison. You know, that kind of encourages me. That even if I am in prison, for the sake of the gospel, I can be contented. Contented means, literally, I have enough. I don't need any more. I can make it with God with what I have. And then our last one is committed. Loves her child. Loves her child. Child abuse is a national problem. Being a mother is hard. Not simply a natural thing that everyone has. It shocks us when a mother abuses her child. We think, well, that's just how she's born. Women just don't abuse children, and most often they do not. More often it's the men. But folks, remember what the older women were to teach the younger? To love their children. Mother's love is not innate. It's learned. It's something that you learn. It's a learned response. And we need role models to do it. And the reason we have to learn it is because we have to learn it in often difficult circumstances. Ladies, mothers, I hate to inform you, but some of your kids are just bratty. And not easy to control. There were times when I had to be pulled up short by both my father and my mother. And one thing, fathers, that my father showed me, if I was in trouble with mom, I was in trouble with him. And even though I was less scared of my mother than my father, I sure was scared when they got together. Don't let the kids divide you. And fathers, support your godly wives and godly mothers. Let the children know that they have to respect and obey their mother. But let's read the rest of the story and then we'll close. This demonstrates how she was committed. So he said, what then is to be done for her? Elisha asked Gehazi, what can we do for her? We've offered to take her to the king and introduce her, but she doesn't want it. What can we do for her? And Gehazi answered, truly she has no son and her husband is old. He said, call her. When he had called her, she stood in the doorway. Then he said, at this season next year, you will embrace a son. And she said, no, my Lord. Oh, man of God, do not lie to your maidservant. What's she doing? Don't even suggest something if you don't mean it. Don't even get my hopes up if you can't deliver. Don't even talk about it. I've wanted it so badly all these years. The woman conceived and bore a son at that season, the next year, as Elisha had said to her. Wow. When the child was grown, the day came that he went out to his father, to the reapers. He said to his father, my head. Had something, severe headache, aneurysm, something terrible. And he said to his servant, watch this, fathers, carry him to his mother. When he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her lap until noon and then died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door behind him and went out. This was as close to the man of God that she could get, was to put him in the room where the man of God had slept. Then she called to her husband and said, please send me one of the servants and one of the donkeys that I may run to the man of God and return. He said, why will you go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath. This guy was clueless. This is not Sunday. Why are we doing this now? There's no festival. Note what she did. And she said, it will be well. She didn't have time to argue or to talk. Let's go. It will be well. Then she saddled a donkey and said to her servant, drive and go forward. Do not slow down the pace for me unless I tell you. Don't think because I'm a woman that you need to go slow. We need to move. So she went and came to the man of God to Mount Carmel. When the man of God saw her at a distance, he said to Gehazi, his servant, behold, there is the Shunammite. Please run now to meet her and say to her, is it well with you? Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child? And she answered, it is well. When she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught hold of his feet, and Gehazi came near to push her away. But the man of God said, let her alone. For her soul is troubled within her, and the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me. Then she said, did I ask for a son from my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me? I bet every woman here knows what she felt. To have a child die, your child, your only child. Then he said to Gehazi, gird up your loins and take my staff in your hand and go your way. If you meet any man, do not salute him. And if anyone salutes you, do not answer him, and lay my staff on the lad's face. The mother of the lad said, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. I'm not going with this nurse. I want you, doctor. I've been absolutely amazed watching a mother as I watched her in our home. Would she set her mind to something? Get out of the way. Commit it. It's going to happen. And he arose and followed her. Then Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff on the lad's face, but there was no sound or response. So he returned to meet him and told him, "The lad is not awakened." He called Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite." Sorry, I skipped two there. When Elisha came into the house, behold, the lad was dead and laid on his bed. So he entered and shut the door behind them both and prayed to the Lord. And he went up and lay on the child and put his mouth on his mouth and his eyes on his eyes and his hands on his hands. And he stretched himself on him, and the flesh of the child became warm. Then he returned and walked in the house once back and forth and went up and stretched himself on him, and the lad sneezed seven times. And the lad opened his eyes. He called Gehazi and said, "Call this Shunammite." So he called her, and when she came to him, he said, "Take up your son." Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground, and she took up her son and went out. How'd that happen? Through the commitment of that loving mother. She wasn't going to leave until the prophet of God, Elisha, had come to heal her son. The great mother of Shunem. What's the conclusion? Commitment in the face of conflict produces character. Mothers, fathers, all of us. That's why we're trying to produce in ourselves and in our children. And character is developed in the crucible of conflict, of difficulties, when we keep our commitments. Honor widows. Hang on. For all of us children, let's honor our mothers by recognizing that they gave their life to bring us into this world and to develop our character. And then there will come a time when we need to return that love to them. Honor widows who are widows indeed, but if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family to make some return to their parents. For this is acceptable in the sight of God. But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Children, are you going to be there when your parents need you? If you miss that, by neglect or being too busy or whatever it is, if you miss that, you will miss one of the greatest, potentially greatest times of your life. When I was drugged, kicking and screaming by events and the Lord to care for my parents for 7 years, arguably it's the best 7 years of my life. Why? Because even though at first I resented it, and I'm busy, and I'm preaching, I'm teaching, and some of that activity had to be curtailed, I was able to return to my parents what they had so lavishly given me. I want to close with a song I heard yesterday. Talk about providence. I never had heard this song. It was written to honor a mother who had passed away. It's called She Loved by Sherry Easter. Someone once asked, if only you knew how short life would be, what would you do? What would they say when God called you home? What would they engrave once you were gone? I hope they would see what I've done in my life, who I've cared for, and how I survived. I hope they'd say, she loved more than anything else. She loved with all of her heart. She loved everyone she believed in. She loved. Oh, she loved. She loved the Lord and served all her life, a sacrificial mother and an honorable wife. She gave all she had and through every trial made life much sweeter because of her smile. Everyone will see what she's done in her life, who she cared for, and how she survived. I'd hoped they'd say, she loved more than anything else. She loved with all of her heart. She loved everyone she believed in. She loved. Oh, she loved. So we're going to stand and sing softly and tenderly, the one who taught us about love. Please come, let's stand, let us sing.